I should not have this background. I don't, to be honest,
I love
I did not do this. I don't know
it.
why it is this.
When I saw it, I'm like, well, I don't know what's going on, but all right, cool, man. It's better than the blurry background.
My God. I really hate this background. It's like in this part of campus. I don't
It
know.
literally looks like you're pretending to be there. Look at those palm trees. What is
That
that
person.
location supposed to be?
Basically, what is that? That's entrance to campus. You know what? Shit. Where is that supposed to be?
Yeah.
I think. Okay, now I actually don't know now. Now I thought I was in one place and now I'm looking, I'm like, where is that?
All I know is that's a really nice sunset in the background.
Nicer than. Well.
Where you're actually at.
That's true. Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton,
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights. All right, ready?
Four.
Shouldn't count. The counting down is worse. Yeah,
3, 2, 1. Welcome, everybody. No, no, that's not how this works.
Welcome.
Welcomes at the beginning, right after the little outtake. You guys,
This is great.
we're phoning it in at this point.
We are. We're zooming it in. That
Welcome
was.
to episode, what is this, 26?
Oh, shoot, man. No, I don't think so. We should know. 24. I like how he said that. 24.
25. I'm going with
You know,
25.
whatever it is, I'm just going to change it to match whatever we just said. We're fine. I'll fix it
If
in
we both
post.
didn't say the same thing, that's a horrible.
That's fine. 24-5.
I like that. Yeah, like episode 24 slash forward slash 25 question mark.
I don't think anyone's keeping track at this point.
I hope you guys enjoyed Arctic Monkeys. And today we get to discuss. I gotta say, Colton, I'm kind of grateful to you. I really enjoyed listening to Haim.
I now this is where I have to, is it Haim or Haim?
It's probably Haim, but
Because it's a Jewish surname, and I always can do that
that means
Haim.
life.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm glad you liked it, man. I you know they were someone that I discovered in grad school, like I want to say, and that was like the magic of like Amazon Music just randomly suggesting me things. Was that like a band you were like somewhat aware of? People mentioned it, and then I actually discovered it for myself because that's the only way I allow myself to listen to music.
Yeah,
Is if I find
definitely.
it
If somebody
myself,
would have told you to listen to
like,
him, you wouldn't have.
ew, gross. But when
But
an algorithm tells me, I'm like, hey, algorithm, it's
I
okay.
can't remember how I ran into him, but I sent you a text saying like I have heard of him. The Wire was the song that I'm like, oh, I saw it on the Red Room or something. They did like an acoustic performance of it.
Okay.
And that's really good. That's a solid tune. And I
And that was
think
back in 2013.
2013. But I think I got a little turned off because when I listened to the album version of it, I thought it was like, if this is the face of the band, there's too much makeup.
The and you're referring to the production,
The
right?
production. Yes.
The production is something I want to talk to you about because I think that's probably. Weirdly for me, like there's so much we could talk about with the songwriting. I think production, especially in the latter two records of the three we talked about, it's almost like a yin and yang to me. There's like such a interesting balance that I found really fascinating.
You almost have to acquire the taste behind it. You have to, like, for me, all three albums I had to listen to numerous times to really start, like melting in to what they were trying to give me. And in the long haul, like I told you, pre-recording, I have nothing but praise for them now.
It's gonna be good. But I do think before that we have a couple things we wanted to talk about. We're
No,
gonna
let's
have
just
our
dive in. We're
let's
just,
just go just
yeah.
forsake everything.
But yes.
We have a nice little structure that I think only we really care that we adhere to.
We were
just talking about how we found music. And this is something I mentioned to you. I wanted to chat about. We don't have to do it for very long.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is about as quote unquote topical as I think you and I can be.
Yeah.
Which is at this point, it's
not topical anymore.
More or less, but we'll see in another month. But
that's a good point.
Yeah. As we talk, Pitchfork, which is the, of course, if you're unfamiliar person, my mom and dad and your mom. Pitchfork is a website where it's mainly was known for its music reviews. And it's still technically going to be around, but it's been, what is it? Rob, remind me, it's been bought by GQ?
I think it was bought by Men's GQ.
Or folded into it, I think it's the, because I think.
Yeah, absorbed, I think was the word that they used. Yeah,
that's the word, yeah. So the bunch of staff were laid off. Sounds like reviews are going to continue, but in a totally different form. And that Pitchfork, as people know it, is no longer going to exist. And I called you, we talked about wanting to chat about this, because for me, when it happened, there was like a huge wave of articles, other podcasts I listened to talking about it as this really kind of tragic thing. And I, full stop, anytime people lose their job,
that's where I'm at. And I think you and I are pretty much on a equilibrium here to where it's, I'm not a huge fan of Pitchfork, but I don't want people to lose their jobs.
No one should lose jobs. That's never a good feeling. But I think when people start talking about the legacy of Pitchfork and what it meant, that's where I have mixed emotions. And I think you and I are maybe in a similar spot.
I think we're in a very similar spot.
When I think of Pitchfork, and this is from like growing up in high school, right around like the early 2000s, Pitchfork was only a website that made me feel bad about things that I liked.
Made me feel dumb sometimes. You get journalists out there who they write, even just reviewing stuff for the artists we're going to talk about today.
Mm-hmm.
There are just times where I'm like, well, shit, I didn't find the particular terminology to express it this way. And just sometimes with Pitchfork, it felt like it was more the reviewer was trying to be higher and mightier than not only the artist, but the reader.
And here's the thing with that, too, for me, which is I think the style of review, and again, this is something that people, when they're doing their retrospectives on Pitchfork now, they mention, right? The Pitchfork kind of, in a lot of ways, trailblazed a certain way of thinking about music. And for me, that is like that very intellectual, not quite scholarly, more poetic, right? In terms of the way that it talks about it, very almost like impressionist, right?
Yeah, I like that division between scholarly and poetic. That's a really good way of putting it.
It's very much so like it is, it's never going to tell you straight out. Like you can read a whole review at different points and actually not know what the person actually thought aside from the rating at the top, that kind of famous, you know, 0 out of 10 scale that they had.
All of this being said, listener, we are Pitchfork 2.0.
But here's, okay, now this is the thing that always
please
kinda,
defend us. Please defend us.
Oh, I have nothing to defend us about. I don't know. We're better.
Hopefully, I mean, definitely not as poetic or scholarly.
There's like a bunch of reviews and things I could point to. And this is not like salty Jimmy World fan is now happy at Pitchfork is dead. This is to me an example of more or less what I'm talking about. This was the Jimmy
you brought
Eat World
this up to me and I'm
Futures review from 2004. And we're going to talk about, I know we're going to talk about Jimmy Eat World in the
eventually
future.
it's going to happen.
What very quickly, what's your very quick beat on Futures? I won't put you on the spot.
My favorite album by them.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's so good. And it's one that's only gotten better with time.
And
right?
That's the thing is when I say my favorite album by them, that means it's one of my favorite albums of all time.
I'm not going to read this whole article. It's by Mark Hogan. Credit where credit's due. 3.0 out of 10. And the subheader here is, with songs like Work, Kill, and Pain, Jimmy Eat World may have finally dragged emo down as far as it can go.
What?
Oh, buddy.
Yeah, you know what? I laughed when I said fucking dick. I'm standing by fucking dick. Are you kidding me?
And Now another line in. Things haven't always been quite this bad from Jimmy Eat World. The best moments on earlier albums, such as Static Prevails and Clarity, weren't Shakespeare, but they communicated universes of longing to awkward kids. The Middle is also an obscenely catchy bit of pop, despite the greater indie community's cred-conscious dismissal of it. But there's none of that here. Futures is like a rotten onion, revealing layer upon layer of foulness. I'm not going to go further, because that's...
I hope the dude is doing fine. I hope he also got laid off.
And, and this is the deal. Like, I don't think either of us... It's like a different opinion of a band that you and I both really appreciate, and one that I think, I don't know, almost objectively, but I know that's not true, a record that is like so good. The thing that I dislike about that era of Pitchfork, I would say towards the end it got better, but that era of Pitchfork, especially from the beginning and then in the middle part of it, it was certain bands were never going to get a good review because they didn't pass the smell test of the aesthetic that the Pitchfork writers, the editorial board there, were trying to present. And whatever objectivity critics want to claim, that's true. And the people like you and me who liked that music, we liked some of the other bands that Pitchfork liked too. But
of course,
they never thought of it that way. You know what I mean?
There's it's like there was this dividing line to where it's like, up here is high art. Mm-hmm. And if you don't fit into this category, you're not good enough. To where I think there needs to be an appreciation for simple art, middle ground art.
And even to put certain bands in that category to me is confusing, because you have others where there are people that are like in the current kind of Pitchfork pantheon of songwriting. And it's suspicious that I'm not naming names. I just don't feel like naming them. But people, they're like, oh, this person's amazing. They're by no means headier, greater intellectually. There's really nothing that divides them from some of these other bands, aside from the fact that Pitchfork decided, nah.
Yeah, it's very complicated to try to break down exactly what establishes this as a good thing or this is a lesser thing.
I don't know. Like, I think Jimmy Eat World especially, there's a weird blind spot with people and the way that they're talked about. I do want to just mention quickly Ian Cohen, who is a writer who I think got hired on later on. He did a review of some of the later Jimmy Eat World records that maybe not quite as strong, but I do think it seemed like there was a pivot later on in Pitchfork's lifespan, if it's now quote unquote dead, where, I don't know, maybe they softened some things up. But my memories of Pitchfork are always going to be that super elitist, very what Max Bemis is singing about on Admit It, right?
Yeah.
Pseudo-intellectual is the best way I can put it.
And I really hope that some of the people who got laid off from Pitchfork are listening to us and going like, your turn.
It's
your turn. You go ahead and critique music now.
It's a lot of bad writing, man. I don't know what to tell you. I didn't write all this bad articles.
I can't write an article to save my life. All I can do is just sit here and discuss music.
I have one other quick question, and then we can move on from this, I promise. But this is the other thing that I'm fascinated by it. People are lamenting the end of Pitchfork as the end of a way of accessing new music that is through curation, right? The idea is that websites like Pitchfork and older music magazines that you and I were probably into when we were younger, but before music magazines kind of evaporated, right?
Magazines in general? Yeah.
Yeah, basically. The idea was those were where people with certain quote-unquote expertise, right, could curate music, and that's how you would find things. And, you know, when I was younger, again, I always talked about opening up Revolver and finding an interview by this guy named Claudio Sanchez. And then that's how I learned about Coheed and Cambria, blah, blah, blah. But that was something people were saying is like kind of a loss. And now so much of how we find music is through algorithms and things. And I'm not sure. To you, is that a loss?
No, it's not a loss at all to me. To you, it's definitely a loss because, I mean, word of mouth means nothing.
I totally agree with you. Like every band I find now is through an algorithm, and I don't see the loss in that. And I'm someone who really dislikes the role that AI is taking in kind of current
understandable
society.
So, yeah.
But I think this idea that we needed people of a certain, you know, taste, quote unquote, to curate music for us was always kind of bullshit.
I can agree, but again, I'm agreeing from a little bit of a place of resentment. Colton, you didn't need Pitchfork to tell you the Arctic Monkeys were good. but no, that's a very, very, very good point. And I hope that the loyalty behind Pitchfork, all the loyal readers, they have to realize that it's like, no, you can still discover music. And on top of that, Pitchfork isn't the only music. They're not the only critics of music. For example, Know Your Rights.
Know Your Rights. Hey,
Know Your Rights.
We're
here for you.
We welcome all of the Pitchfork.
we will be your Polaris.
Jimmy at World's Integrity Blues got a 7.3. I'll never.
That was a
weird day.
And by the way, I did say Polaris as a Jimmy Eat World reference.
Very nice, very nice. Well, thank you for that, Rob. We can check in with each other on our songs of the week.
But just really quick, for all you new Pitchfork fans who are coming in here because you need a place of refuge, go ahead and feel free to email us at know.your.rights. Colton, how do you spell rights?
W-R-I-T-E-S.
That's right. .podcast@gmail.com. We've had some really good emails.
Yeah, keep them coming. We want to hear what you think about the loss of curated music. What is it? Is it okay that we find music now through an algorithm? Tell us, how did you find this podcast?
All right.
Is it because you're related to us?
You knew one of our relatives, maybe? but based off of algorithm, I'll go ahead and kick this off. Again, I'm doing the Instagram thing. Just this particular artist came in, and it bummed me out because it was on Instagram where I heard Kid Static.
It's a good rapper name.
Not a bad rapper name. Definitely, I think, would be more... It's more impactful to me in the aughts as a... Well,
I think that's why, like, it's a very, like, early aughts.
Yeah. Yeah. But when I say it bummed me out is what he did, what I found was him just doing an experiment to where it was some sort of, you know, like, hip-hop song generator topic or topic generator. And it was just about rapping. And what he put down was incredible. I'll try to find it. I don't know if I can have it in the background because it was just on Instagram. It was kind of like a thought experiment for him. It's kind of like the Write a Record Challenge to where, okay, let me do this really quick.
Mm-hmm.
And this song, while I think you and I both agree, it's not phenomenal, but the song I chose was Social Anxiety.
He and those beats are produced by him, by Kid Static.
I'm not 100% sure, but it does sound like that's the case. It does seem like a home studio, one of the numerous different at-home softwares where you can kind of create a beat.
I loved the beat. I thought the beat was great.
Really?
It has, I don't know why, but the first person I thought of, I don't even know if you're familiar, Bus Driver.
I'm not
rapper,
but I'll check it out.
It's the first thing, not the flow necessarily, but the beat with, I don't know, the overall vibe of it. But there were definitely things I like. I think, well, I want you to talk about it.
The chorus was not necessarily up to snuff. You know, it wasn't. It's a little redundant, and I when you hear the little like low voice, which. Based off of Haim or Haim, there will be a moment where I actually do like that little pitch adjustment where you pull that off. But on this one, it's not necessarily that it was spectacular, but I do think it's an up and coming rapper, you know, that I think definitely should have some sort of platform, and I hope you find a better one than Know Your Rights.
You have a platform now, and it's us, and we're happy to do it.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was. Like I said, it wasn't end all be all, but
I think for me, it's always that any rap song I've seen that is kind of based in a particular topic, I don't know why this is. I'm always less compelled by it than I am rap that like explores themes and I don't know, is a little bit more free in what it's talking about. It's almost like with Atmosphere. Whenever Atmosphere wrote like a song about one thing where it was like a very kind of focused topic that he's writing on, the rhymes are less compelling to me. the same reason why I think Stand by Eminem is vastly overrated.
I completely agree with that. I think it's fun storytelling, but it's not the most remarkable storytelling.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I got like a POS vibe from the guy, and I think
I like
that
that.
shows promise to him. Yeah.
Very, very cool. All right, Kid Static, Social Anxiety, born in Chicago, based currently now in Austin, Texas. So that's, I don't know if my person is based in Austin, Texas. I actually don't think that's true. But the South.
Are they a person?
It's one. Okay, let me just say my song of the week is Waxahachie.
Mm-hmm.
Right back to it. Which this is the single for her upcoming record. Waxahachie is the one singer-songwriter. And then she has other people who, including her sister.
I know that you and Alex have discussed, I've been stuck in conversation with you and Alex. So I'm like, I have no ground to talk right now.
No, but it's Katie Crutchfield is the kind of core singer-songwriter. And she was actually in a band with her twin sister, I believe P.S. Elliott was the name. Performs in Waxahachie every now and then, but she is, Katie Crutchfield is the person, right?
Gotcha.
Behind it.
Gotcha.
And this features, what'd you think?
Yeah, the song was good. I've listened to it one time, and off the top of my head, I'm not hearing the melody or any of that, but I'm sure if it just was playing, which I'm sure it is in the background right now.
I think it's extraordinary. I think at this moment, Waxahachie, Katie Crutchfield for me is, mm-hmm. like if someone was like, name who you think is the best active singer-songwriter, I think it's Katie Crutchfield.
Interesting.
I think she's really, really freaking good. And
I can't disagree with that because I did have to write down, you just settle in like a song with no end. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was incredible. Not just lyric, but also the way it's utilized as a hook.
And that's the thing where her version of kind of, well, I hate the term alt country, and I know that gets thrown around a lot. There's a lot of, there's a folk foundation to what she's doing here. Her previous record, St. Cloud, also did a pretty good job of that. I do think that what I notice in this record, lyrically, she's opting for even more of a straightforward approach. She has a knack, I think, for a lot of more kind of impressionistic lyrics.
Gotcha.
That kind of like throw images at you, but there's not necessarily a coherent topic she's addressing.
Yeah, particular is, message, yeah.
But this is such a classic kind of love off again, on again song that you know exactly what it's about from the beginning. The way that she is, you know, kind of showing her whole hand from the start, but nothing gets redundant. Everything is kind of building on each other.
Yeah, and it felt rooted in honesty, you know, which is something I would want to say about Haim. Like, to where there's maybe some of the lyrics can be exaggerated or whatever, but the point of the song is definitely sincere and concerned about the particular subject that's being discussed.
Well, and the one that you well, the one that you mentioned, right? You settle in like a song with no end. It's partly the delivery. It's also that is a pretty basic rhyme, right? And using a simile like a song with no end, that is on paper kind of cheesy, right? That's middle school.
Makes me think rhyme. Of Lamb Chop or what was
this is a song that never but it's the way that it's folded into the rest of the chorus.
Yeah.
And it's in that way, so such a striking image. And there's a lot of confidence that I think it takes for her to make that work the way that it should.
And it's funny you say confidence, too, because the delivery has nothing but confidence behind it.
It's great. Yeah.
Here we go, everybody. Confidence is going to be the word of the episode.
Yeah. MJ Lenderman, who is the guy that features on the song, and he does those guitar solos, which I think he's like a Ben Queller. Generation Z's version of Ben Queller.
Welcome back, Ben.
Maybe not quite as good as Ben Queller, although lauded by Pitchfork.
So are you implying that it, like, he's not necessarily that fascinating of a lead guitar player? Or is that skilled, per se?
I mean, I listen to his record Boat Songs. I don't want to get too far down the MJ Lenderman road because there's more of his I'd like to listen to. I wasn't blown away by what I heard from Boat Songs, which is his kind of big record that just came out. He's great on this track. I think he's great on it. I just had to mention, I listened to him and all I could think is, this dude's Ben Queller.
It breaks my heart, but yes, I think you chose the better song out of the two. Nothing against you, Kid Static. I think you got a lot of good shit ahead.
This is not a competition. Although I started it as a competition from the very beginning. Most Def, listen to Most Def, people.
Yeah.
And
what's your opinion on Most Def?
It's great.
The Lakers are better than the Warriors. Let's go with Lucky speaking on your behalf.
Oh, right. I think Most Def is great. I think he's a right shit actor though. I can't think of a lot of good.
What do you think about like him and Drake, this weird little rift that they got?
Haven't been paying attention. I think it's a waste of time to get bogged down in what celebrities say about each other. It's the late capitalist death roll that we should all just stop caring about. I do think Most Def was good in Something the Lord Made, which was a pretty good movie with Alan Rickman, where he plays a surgeon.
I appreciate that, Lucky. All right, Colton, come back in.
I've been practicing. I'm ready. Hit me. And I agree with everything Lucky said for the most part. And
I know you've been discussing all this stuff with.
I don't actually know what Most Def said about Drake. What did he say?
I think he said he's not like legitimate hip hop or whatever. Kind
I agree
of like
with that. He's R&B-ish.
Yeah.
It's the same reason why Travis Scott isn't a rapper.
I just happen to right now remember that I have to punish you. I was not focused on that.
Even though I think we both agree, did we not hear that our song draft was tied?
Up until your buddy. Well, our buddy.
What about your sister?
She said it's a tie. She didn't have a definitive answer, so.
Okay.
So she kind of canceled herself out. Doesn't matter. Sorry, Burrito. I love you.
How dare you? Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break, and then we're going to jump into Haim. Talk about this.
I can't wait. And Leo, handle it, man.
If you're looking for fun events, awesome music, and enjoyable podcasts, then look no further. The Baseball and Entertainment family has you covered. With so many talented people in our community, it was only right that we not only bring you events, but all sorts of awesome entertainment. Follow Baseball on social media or join our Discord community to stay updated and engaged in everything. That is at Baseblown on social media and discord.gg/baseblown for our Discord. Baseball and Entertainment, bringing you more than just bass in your face.
And we're back. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Definitely check out Baseblown. We're part of it. Going to be more appreciative of them.
Baseblown Entertainment Podcast. We're happy to be a part of that. And
hell yeah.
We're happy to talk about Haim today. And
I am. Yeah.
We did a small intro there. I wanted to just say, when I first brought up Haim, there's a few things that I should have mentioned to you when I was giving you clues from last episode.
Mm-hmm.
One, and maybe the most obvious one, was we've talked about Haim before. We've at least talked about Danielle Haim because
yes,
she was all over that Vampire Weekend record, Father of the Bride.
And it's funny you say that. When I was listening to Women in Music Part 3, the entire time listening, I was like, somehow Vampire Weekend is involved with this. I had completely forgotten about what we talked about during the Vampire Weekend, but somehow there's a relation between this. And Batman, you came back?
Batman. Rob has still not learned how to say your name.
I hope that's not offensive. I don't think it should be. I'm not trying to say it in a mean way.
But Rostam Batmanji. But it's so funny you said that. I had the same idea, and I totally forgot about that also.
Yeah.
That he was all over that record.
And also Danielle was one of the producers as well. But mm-hmm. I just could hear little tidbits within it. Well, I mean, to be fair, when it comes to they remind me of so many artists.
And I think that's the deal. There's trying to describe them genre-wise is difficult because in each record, they do seem to move around. But I heard one descriptor that totally also makes sense for why I love them. And the version of Haim I love the most, they're just a good soft rock band. And I love soft rock.
Yeah, I got nothing against it. I definitely heard a little bit of a like adult contemporary.
That's exactly what I'm talking. It's almost adjacent to yacht rock. It's not quite yachty enough.
Thank God.
To be oh, I love it. I'll take soft rock over any other kind of rock. Don't give me too chunky. Well,
you go ahead and you can be on that island by yourself. I'm not necessarily gonna say all that. But at the same time, even for as much as there's soft rock and contemporary rock, they delve into different facets outside of rock.
Oh, for sure. And they, on the whole, do a good job of absorbing a lot of that without losing the thread necessarily. I don't know if you agree with that. Like, taking in these new genres, but it still feels like a Haim song.
I can agree with that for sure.
Okay.
But, I mean, even her vocals, there are times where I'm just like, am I listening to Danielle or am I listening to Sheryl Crow?
And I think that's the other reason why I love her voice. As a, there's just something so pure and unfiltered. Say, and by the way, there's tons of filters all over, but it's the,
for sure, yeah,
there's no affect to her voice. I think in a lot of like indie music, there's ways that singers are trying to take on certain affects. And in women singers in indie music, I always notice one of my least favorite things is like a faux Billie Holiday kind of affect that is so unnatural and so ugh.
And I think you're right. When I said that I hear, you know, Sheryl Crow, it doesn't sound to me like she's trying to sound like Sheryl Crow. It's just her naturally, the same with Esty, the same with Alana. You know, I think all of them are, they are their own voice. That's actually the thing I admired the most as I, when I first started listening to this, I didn't think I was going to like it that much. I hope this doesn't sound offensive to anybody who's a big Haim fan, but initially it's like, I is overproduced. This sounds way too late 80s, early 90s. Not that good of music, not that sincere of songwriting. Mm-hmm. I was definitely proven wrong, but again, the sincerity of what they were coming in with. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that is the kind of weird duality with them, because we've already said this numerous times, the word overproduced or like hyperproduced, right? Yeah. In all three records, it's there. Yeah. My favorite record, which I won't say what it is now, it's a headphone record for sure. Like listening to it with headphones and just getting all the little things they did in the studio, include things you're like, you didn't have to do that.
Sure.
But for whatever reason, because the songwriting is just so purely strong and tight and good, it works and like a really exciting level. But when they are another way where it can go over the edge, and I think that's where it starts to falter for sure.
Yeah. Well, and the plus side was, I told you this earlier in the week, watching live performances. And as I said, just listening to The Wire as an acoustic live performance, I'm like, these women are amazing. And watching their live performances, it's kind of the beauty of, like, on their albums, they're going to have this particular sound. But live, it's fucking rock and roll. Like, and they crush it live.
They make it work.
Yeah. I was thoroughly impressed.
I'm stepping all over you today, man. I'm really sorry.
Don't worry about it. I'm kind of in a funk. My mind is scatterbrained like a motherfucker right now.
Everything you said, I'm like very excited. I'm like, yeah,
yeah,
like a fucking retriever. No,
I love dogs. It was perfect. Right.
Love me. I think a great example is "Want You Back," right? Where that track has so much production, but when I hear it live, they have those little strings at the beginning through keyboard. I like the SNL performance they do of "Want You Back" is great. And I do think there's just something about siblings harmonizing that is.
Wholesomeness to the band, in a strange way. And maybe wholesomeness is not the right term, but like the camaraderie, it's like you can tell they're that much closer as bandmates.
I think wholesomeness works really nicely, actually. Like, I think like in the videos where they're doing choreographed dances and stuff, I don't know. It's just, it's all very endearing.
Again, everybody, I did not watch any of the music videos. I think actually diving into live performances was a little out of my norm, but I didn't want to watch any music videos.
And
can I address this really quick? Because I've said this before in previous episodes that I don't like watching live videos. I would have hated Dredge's first album if I would have saw their music video. And I think that was kind of this turning point for me where I'm like, I don't want to see a music video. I just want to hear the music. I don't want to see them
counterpoint
performing
to that,
in
though.
Front of a camera.
Counterpoint. Mm-hmm. If you had watched the video, you wouldn't have waited around to listen to all the records that came after that, Catch Without Arms.
That's a very good point. But Catch Without Arms is a good album.
We maybe one day we'll do Dredge, but...
An album.
Oof.
But
can I tell a very quick story about that?
Of course.
If we want to leave it in. Nah. I think we were playing... What was that club in Universal Studio City Walk?
I want to say it was B.B. King's.
It was B.B. King's, yeah. We were there for that show, and we got there way too early, so we were just kind of walking around. Mm-hmm. And they have that big screen in the middle of Universal City Walk. I don't know if it's still there. I haven't been there in years. And they always play music videos on that screen. And lo and behold, they're playing Dredge, Bug Eyes, which is mm-hmm. my favorite Dredge
song. Very good,
song.
Too. Yeah.
And it's the music video, and we're all kind of losing our minds. Like, oh, my God, they're playing Dredge in the middle of this. And some guy who's walking down the street, and he's like one of those handing out music demos. He's like, hey, man, catch this demo of my band. And he sees me look up at the screen. He's like, don't worry, we're way better than this garbage. And I was like, this is Dredge. I was very, and I saw like the color grow out of his face. He was like, shit, I got it right. I'm very sympathetic to that guy now, but that was just funny.
That's fair. I remember seeing that Dredge video years after I was into that particular album. And that video, I was like, this reminds me of Creed, buddy. This is a really dumb video. And I was very happy that I hadn't seen the video because I would have never appreciated the song. And so yeah. I think just from then, I'm like, no, I don't want to see the music video.
I think the issue is because it was so amazing that the drummer was playing piano while he was drumming. I think any time where someone is like people are excited about a band because someone does something that they could just easily hire another person to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the same reason why anyone who like gets a lot of attention because they use loops, like looping mm-hmm. software during live shows. I'm like, who cares? Like, just who cares?
I can appreciate the live performance from the drummer multitasking and playing the little piano part.
Kind of. Just get a keyboardist. Who cares?
Yeah. But then you're splitting your earnings when you do that.
I mean, that's like rooting for a baseball team that refuses to pay. It's like the Rays. Like, oh, the Rays don't pay their players a lot, and look how much they get out of it. Hey, pay your players, man.
I don't want
them
to
do
that.
Where are we? I'm sorry.
All right. So I'm nothing but respect. Well, Dredge just to the wayside now.
We put Dredge through the dredger there. All right. Let's get into our categories to hop back into this. Best song, Rob, would you like to get started?
I'll just go kind of more the obvious route. I have a couple of different ones that I would want to say. I can get this out of the way really quick.
Mm-hmm.
Freaking The Wire never left me. And that was the first. I think it's because it's just been stuck in my head for the last 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have unbelievable songs that are right on the same level, but it's the fact that I can't stop singing The Wire to myself.
Yeah.
Has just kind of...
They are in the...
Made it concrete.
The best way possible, right? They are pop artists. Like, yeah. Pop in the... Like, the crafting of a pop song to make it super, super catchy. The hooks that they have and the way that they rush in all these syllables, right?
What a fumble when it came down to the wire.
Oh.
Right. But I also love the fact that, and this is going to be hard to mix down, but you were talking about kind of the Tom Petty thing,
mm-hmm.
and it took me forever. I'm like, what? When I hear her say, retired, you know, when she says, yes. Don't let your mind retire, and I was like, it's Tom Petty. That's what I'm hearing.
I've heard them compared to like the Eagles, other people. I seriously hear Tom Petty in
quite a bit.
Every record.
Yeah.
Every record, I think.
A Little of Your Love is absolutely Tom Petty.
Oh, yeah, that's Don't Do Me Like That.
Yeah, exactly.
Holy shit, I love that song.
That's a great song. I really have nothing but good things to say about them. But yeah, that's the song that kind of pops into my head. I can give, like I said, honorable mention. My song 5 is Cool.
And that's the one where it's in almost total pop territory.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But it's total pop territory except for that guitar riff coming in. You know, all of a sudden I'm like, ooh, there's a little bit of Sabbath here. It was a cool duality behind that song. And then Right Now is really cool. I can't remember it off the top of my head, but I know I have it in my notes.
Yeah. I love that, man. And I do think there's a kind of like, it's not quite soul, but I think that's what makes a lot of those singles they have work so well. Is it is like, it's like pop soft rock, but mm-hmm. it's the way that they're allowing that swing to certain things too, and the rhythm mm-hmm. and the way that the vocals are, they're so rhythmic. Like there's such a great rhythmic quality to the way they get the vocals going. And
like, oh yeah. Ooh. Like Danielle does a lot of those little like stutters into
you're gonna
a line.
Be alone anyway.
It's just wonderful. It's fun. And that song just has not, I have not been able to get that out of my head. And I think I'm not upset that it's stuck in my head. So I just had to kind of go with that one.
I'm looking at my list now. I have for every of the song categories, I have two choices, and I don't know what to do with this.
That's fine.
My favorite two, Something to Tell You and Want You Back.
Not bad.
Something to Tell You, man. I think, and Something to Tell You was my first choice. I think Want You Back is the first time song I ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
And that was such a great introduction to, I think, what they're doing well when all cylinders are firing for me. And both of those are very much in the vein of The Wire, right?
Yeah.
There's that kind of sulfurness to it. There's some synths, lots of vocal harmonies working, lots of like, I mean, I wonder how many tracks do you think are on Want You Back?
You know, let's play it really quick and then I'll say that.
Okay.
I said we were opposite lovers. You kept trying to prove me wrong. And I know that I ran you down. So you ran away with your heart. But just know that I want you back. Just know that I want you back. Just know that I want you. I'll take the fall and the fault. And I said, I'll give you all the love I never gave before.
So many tracks.
Yeah.
So it's maximalist pop, right? And
But it might not be as many. Like when I was talking to you about how it's, you know, there's too much makeup on this album
mm-hmm.
or on their recordings. In the long haul, the more I listen, it's actually not as many as I thought. It just initially, it's more like each track is hyper produced as opposed to there's too many tracks on this.
Yeah, they definitely take the philosophy of, hey, we're in the studio, we got all these tools available, let's use them, right?
And the thing that I kept getting from it is let's have fun, because throughout the song, I Want You Back is your favorite song, right?
Man, I go back and forth. I get, let's just do that. I do love Something to Tell You. I think it's so mm-hmm. great. But Want You Back is my favorite, and I'm just going to go ahead and say I think it's the best. So go for it, yeah.
Not a bad choice at all.
The eagle and the horse,
yeah.
It's when you're talking about having fun, it's like there's no need for that, and it's awesome. Like,
well, yeah, it's what I was bringing up before. It's where there were people who are saying, it's like, yeah, this isn't high art, but you know, it's still good. And I'm like, dude, it's not necessarily. I understand it's not high art, but fuck high art. Plenty of times where I think high art typically takes itself way too fucking serious.
Mm-hmm.
Where listening to them, I'm going like, hey, great musicians. Everybody knows what they're fucking doing. Mm-hmm. And they're going to execute and just like, yeah, let's add another little layer.
And just to get back to, there, I don't think there's ever really a science to catchy lyrics and how to make sure you're developing a hook that's going to work. But there's something I think a lot of great choruses have in common. Which is what we're saying with The Wire too, that kind of rhythmic quality where you're almost kind of staccato, right? You allow a lot of words and how it rolls off the tongue and how you develop a flow to what the lyrics in the chorus are saying. And so when you go, I'll take the fall and the fault for this, I'll give you all the love I never gave before. All the love I never gave before. Oh my God. Like when you're saying it, it's beautiful.
And that is really their specialty. That's this, here we go. That's the magic sauce, is the
Just,
cadence behind the vocal melody.
oh yeah, it works so great. And the rhythm section is, I think, in most tracks that I love that Unsung here, there's some great guitar songs, but I mean, Esty's an amazing bassist. He's
Yes.
good. I know that they all play drums. I think they all three do, and at different points.
I
And I
would
think
assume so.
Danielle does in certain performances I saw, but
Well, I think Danielle, somehow Julius Casablancas comes back around into this podcast, but like he wanted her to play. It's fascinating that she was playing drums for, I can't remember the name of the artist she was playing drums for, but Julius Casablancas comes along and goes like, I want you to play guitar for my solo tour.
He's the unwanted patron saint of this podcast. He keeps popping
I
up and we go,
have
get out of
nothing
here.
against him. You have
Get
something.
out of here, Julia Casablancas.
But yeah, no, all three of them, they're just they're multi-instrumentalists.
And I think that maybe attributes to how lush some of these tracks feel. There's like no limit to what they think they want to put in there. Oh, all
And
right.
what they can do to it. There has to be, I can remember my dad talking to me about Jackson Browne, and he had a guy who would have to tell him like, no, that's enough for the recording. Like, stop. I think there
Yeah.
has to be somebody in the studio with them. He's going like, no, no more. No more.
Like in NFL games, the guy who's holding the coach back from
Exactly. Pulling the
the
coach back, like you're getting on the field. Just you made the right call. It's good.
That's amazing. All right. Well, now I'm going to sour the mood. I'll go first with worst song. I have two, and this is probably one of those. I don't think there's a Haim song that I listen to and I go, none of that, please. I hate
I
it.
agree. I agree.
I do think there are some where they lose some of that playful nature to me. They're trying something else on another feel, and I just don't think it lands as well as it should. The two that come to mind, I'll just say one. Go ahead. Los Angeles, first track on Women in
That's
Music.
not a terrible choice. While I do enjoy that song, I think the verse melody is really good, but it sounds sampled. It's
Well,
all
I.
sampled.
It's kind of my problem with that record. I and the fact that they open with these horns, and I'm like, okay, I'm looking for something to tell you, big, lush arrangements. And there's something about a song that opens with one instrument, and then that instrument totally blocks out, and it doesn't come again ever. And then they have one, I believe, saxophone solo at the end of that track that is like the saddest saxophone solo I've ever heard.
Maybe not ever, but close.
It's yeah, maybe not. Maybe the Jimmy Eat World saxophone solo is worse.
How dare you, Jimmy World? That's
But
sacrilege. But yeah.
it loses that playfulness we were talking about, I think. That track. The other one I like honorable mention is 3 AM.
Gotcha.
It is a like mediocre early aughts R&B song.
Which is kind of fun, something I kind of enjoy behind them. But I get that it took me a minute when it started. I was very caught off guard with the dude calling for a booty call. But then the song does kind of clarify, the relation to the opener.
Yeah.
But going back to Los Angeles, like
Yeah.
I thought that, I don't know what they were sampling. I was trying to look it up, and I just kind of was I wasn't able to find it. But I thought the verse melody was really good, but they kept losing me because I thought that like Los
Los
Angeles.
Angeles.
I think that was a really solid vocal melody. But yeah, the song does start kind of getting, it does start getting carried away from itself.
I think the sampling quality of the instruments too, it loses. There's a foundation to the greatest Haim songs, where how to put it. You know what the best way of putting this is? It's the reason why I liked the first Fun record and I hated the second Fun record. It's why
You
I hated
listen
Aim and
to an
Ignite.
entire Fun record?
I hated Some Nights, and I loved what is it, Aim and Ignite, because Aim and Ignite was so playful and it felt like it could go anywhere and the instruments were organic. And then when you move into Some Nights and all the drums are programmed and so everything is on a loop, And so the songs don't go anywhere. They're all stagnant. That's my problem with Los Angeles.
Not bad. I still assume you don't hate that song.
But that's fine. Also, very Vampire Weekend. That,
Again, listening to that album, like that I know you. Somebody part of Vampire Weekend is involved on this.
Yeah. All right, worst song, Rob. Go ahead. Rob is everyone, just so you know, deciding now in real time.
No. I have a note. I just have to, again, I think I told you this before I sent you a text message. I was like, I get it, we're only listening to three albums, but because they explore so much music within these albums, it doesn't feel like I just listened to three albums. I feel like I still feel like I have to listen to them more.
There's a density to these records.
Yeah. To where I hope they release a new album soon and we can just discuss that new album at the beginning of a future episode. And I can kind of have like a chance to clarify some of my opinions, but Ready For You ? Is what I have written here.
All right, let me listen to it real quick.
Yeah, too many babies.
Maybe I was trying to forget all my crazy reactions over my ex. Maybe you played way too hard to get, so I kept it moving to another one night stand. Baby, I promise I will treat you right.
I don't know, man. Here's the thing. Haim, what I wish, I want to take the Haim sisters. I want to send them in a time machine so that they're at their peak in the 80s. I want them to have... Don't you want Whitney Houston to sing Ready For You?
Sure. I want them to be the female influential, the artist from the 80s. Like towards like Heart Be Damned. Fucking Paula Abdul be damned. Fucking. I want it to be Haim. Like, that's who I want to have inspired. Like, I think Taylor Swift would have been better if Haim, and I know that she's worked with them, and not saying that Taylor Swift is bad, but I think she would have been that much better. She would have been that much better.
No, I don't know. I can kind of get it. I love Ready For You, man. I think it's so good.
Again, I put a question mark. And again, my notes were just too many babies.
We've talked about that criticism with Led Zeppelin. So I'll hold that. Yeah. I know what you're saying.
Yeah. I don't like.
Baby.
Yeah. When you just overutilize the term baby, it really annoys the hell out of me. I like Default American did a cover of Bretton Wood, and I would leave out what's the song? Just give me some kind of sign, girl.
Oh, yeah. My.
And I would leave out the girls and babies because I hated singing it. It made me feel lesser.
And yeah.
God, that was a fucked up
or
term.
Or deers. I don't like when people use deers. I was just thinking of that. What is it, Ben? I always forget their name every single time. They're awful. But it was not your fault but mine. And it was your heart on the line. I really fucked it up this time, didn't I, my dear? Oh, I hate that deer.
Is it Mumford and Sons?
It's Mumford and Sons, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That deer, I want to burn that somewhere.
Yeah, it's just... It's which is perfect, because I think are we going into overrated song, or...
Let's do overrated, and then work our way... Let's do a negative sandwich where we do the positive best song, worst song, go. Overrated, like, and then on our way out to underrated. Overrated, so, Rob.
I'll start with it, and it's based off of words we hate being used in a song.
Mm-hmm.
It's Falling.
I'm getting a bad feeling about your worst record, but
You shouldn't. But it was, again, these categories were really difficult to choose. And so I just had to go with, okay, there's a hit song, and it's one of their singles. And they say Falling a shitload of times. And if you're familiar with our podcast, we have brought up don't say Falling in a song. And especially don't say Falling, 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 Falling. I'm falling. I don't think the song's bad. There's one classic.
Wait, Falling is off of the first record, correct?
Yeah, I think it's the very first song.
That's right. You are totally right.
Finally. but
but yeah, that's a hard one. No, I'll buy that one.
Well, yes. you would really hate what I initially was going to choose.
We're going to use Want You Back?
No. My initial overrated song was going to be Fubt.
Oh.
F-U-B-T. But it is a really good song. My biggest issue was basically off of that song. It's like that riff just keeps going, keeps going. But okay, they have a live performance where they don't keep it going. And
I don't have F-U-B-T for anything, but I do have to say that's one of those tracks where the way that riff works with the rhythm of the vocals does not, I don't care what people say, it does not work. In the verses, it doesn't work. Yeah. In the chorus, it works. They find the pocket. But
that's
the
thing.
Not in the pocket in the verse.
There's a live performance in which Danielle stops singing, stops playing that little, like, she stops and sings and then comes back in with it. And that was, that kind of like guided me into, okay, this is a really good song. Very Prince-esque. But I don't even know why we're talking about FUBT because the song
that's
is
not your overrated. I kind of cheated here for overrated, and I can I well okay. Did you listen to Summer
like
Girls?
Once, because I didn't know when I listened to Women in Music
Part Three.
When it hit the Taylor Swift featured on Gasoline, I thought, okay, these are just like bonus whatever. It's
right.
Not part of the actual album. I thought FUBT was the end of it. And so today, all of a sudden, looking at it, I was like, oh, shit. Okay, I got to listen to these last three bonus tracks.
I mean, I didn't really listen to those. I knew of Summer Girls because I remember when the single came out. That was, like, I think the first big single for Women in Music Part 3. And it's not on the official record.
Okay.
But it's a pretty, again, this is my kind of trolling through seeing what people like. My first thought was going to be The Steps, but here's the thing. I think The Steps is amazing. Because unlike any best top 10 Haim song list bands or people make, The Steps is near the top. I'm close to agreeing. I think The Steps is great, but I can't say it's overrated. Summer Girls, for such the same reason I think that Los Angeles is one of their worst songs, Summer Girls is very just unoriginal. It's nothing that I want out of a Haim song. The playfulness isn't quite there. It feels like a throwaway Sublime song. I don't know. My other one, though, was The Wire, and I'm really sorry about that.
That's okay. That, like I said, it was just an earworm. I couldn't get it out of my head. I had to just give it its due credit. That I'm like, all right, fuck it. Apparently, this is a song that will never leave me.
I do think my thing about The Wire... The others of their songs that I think are so great, I think there's a way that they are able to write about something so specific and so, like, it's such a niche emotion that they're trying to capture in a song that is so also really powerful. And they package it in a song that is so, like you mentioned, earwormy and catchy and just so pop intelligent. And I think The Wire is the least compelling moment that they're trying to capture.
Yeah, I think the concept of the song, I wanted to break up with you, and I think you're going to be fine if I break up with you.
It's right.
Basically the concept of the song.
But technically wise, in the way it's constructed and written, it's amazing. I totally agree with you.
I think you nailed it with a pop intelligence, and that's something that they have tenfold.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of crazy, like the way it feels like they could do that. I want to share my underrated. Again, I have two. This is ridiculous. And one I literally just found and forgot about. But the first one has got to be Don't Save Me. Because I didn't listen to their first record. Really, when I first found Haim, I was all about Something to Tell You. And then when Women in Music came in, I was listening to that. I think their first record to me is hit or miss. I think kind of like Falling. Okay. I think there's some things about it that I think some of the ideas they have in that first record, like a lot of first records, become stronger later on. Don't Save Me, though. That's like, it's like what I think the War on Drugs is aiming for a lot of times. It doesn't always get to. I love War on Drugs, but I think Don't Save Me is, it's just so classically good. And it's one of the songs I totally missed the first one. Baby, don't say it.
There you go. Yeah. So you said this is your underrated.
Underrated, yeah. Because and it's, for me, just purely because it's a song that I had missed from theirs.
I'm just pretending, even though it is playing in the background, but I am hearing the chorus again in my head. Yeah,
and the way that it drives, the way it picks up, they don't actually have a lot of songs like that. And I just think it works so, so beautifully.
Excellent choice. I'm just going to let it play out a little bit longer. I'm just going to shut up for a moment. Let's both shut up and just let it play for a moment.
I mean, legally, I don't think we can.
We need to... we can't.
Legally, about... I don't think we should.
All right, fine. But mine, I have underappreciated song. I think we talked about two of them. Did we talk about Nothing's Wrong and Founded in Silence, right?
I don't think we've talked about either of those.
I thought we
not really.
Okay, well, screw it. Those two were close, but Man in the Magazine?
Ooh, yeah,
I really like that one. That's got like a Joni Mitchell vibe. It also has a fucking Radiohead vibe that it sounds like, maybe not Radiohead, it sounds like it could be on Tom York's Eraser.
It's definitely got that, it's a very 90s riff, that very, yeah. She's got to be on the A string, like an open E. It's what it sounds like.
Yeah, it sounds like it's some sort of like possibly open tuning.
Very, very, my friend Sam. I could go for hours.
yeah, but
no one gets that reference.
I dug it, and it's basically like something that they have to deal with all the time. To where it's like it's a song kind of about misogyny coming from two men critiquing their music.
Yeah, no, it's also like, I don't know. Like most message songs, right? There's a way to do that where you can hear the message and just like really politically be into it and think, man, I wish he did that song better. And I think the song is kind of perfectly packages so much of what they're trying to say in that record, I think, because it is told through them, right? This is not them like feminism, the personal is political, right?
Yeah.
And I think they capture that so nicely. And how many acoustic tracks really do they have?
Amen. That is exactly where I was going to take this. It's just like, this is one of the most like dried down. We're not going to add like, it's straightforward. It just goes for it. And totally. I very much so appreciated that.
Very, very great, man. All right. We're already at the albums. Do we want to, we've been saying we'll do worst first. And then move to best.
Sure. I had a very difficult time.
I really don't know how I feel about my choice. I'm almost feeling like changing it. Because us talking about it makes me want to change. But do we want to do it on the count of three?
Yeah, give me a moment. Because I believe, I don't know if we said this in the actual recording process. But I sent you a text earlier today on,
saying,
what's the fucking bad album?
Yeah.
I don't know what the bad album is.
It was definitely a thing where, just to give listeners a quick viewpoint of how I do this, I'm not like listening to every album going, is this the worst? Is this the worst? It's always the opposite. I'm thinking, which one's my favorite? Which is the one I love the most? The worst is usually, I mean, there are some choices that are so painfully obvious.
Yeah, that's the thing is, usually it just kind of exposes itself.
Yeah, and it'll, like, we've, in the history of our podcast, there's a couple of worst albums. I think you and I, not only was it easy, I think we enjoyed ripping into those.
Very true.
I'll Be Your Girl. What's happening, people? I still, you know, I almost dipped back into that record to see if I gave it a hard time for nothing. Oh, my God.
No, I think you were justified.
I'll go ahead and get us started. The record let's do it on three. Okay. I didn't want to put pressure on you. One, two, three.
Something
Women
to tell
in Music
you.
Part 3, you're wrong. Unbelievable.
Here's the thing. None of them are bad albums.
That's the best one.
I knew that's what you were going to say.
Can I ask you, what's your best album? Rob right now is massaging his
It's like I wear eyeglasses. I'm just massaging the inside of my... Yeah.
You okay there, buddy?
Well, because I feel bad, because I knew when I was going to say that, Something to Tell You, I know he's going to say no. And I knew it was your favorite album.
Well, I could tell that it wasn't yours, because on our negative categories, those were the ones he kept dipping to. And I was like, there's something afoot here.
I don't even know how to address this. Do I address this from me thinking it's a bad album or address this from you thinking it's the best album?
Well, okay, let's do this. I'll tell you why I love it, why it's my best album. And I'll also tell you why I think you didn't like it as much as the other two. I'm going to pull double duty.
Okay, sure. Do it.
I love it because it's great. You love it. You didn't love it because got bad taste in music. No, that's not any of that.
This is the overrated album, I guess. I don't even know how to address it. It's a
great album. I really love it because this was my first introduction to Haim. This is the Haim where, for me, it was all about really big pop songs. Really big pop slash soft rock songs. Like, Give Me Just a Little Your Love, right? The horns. Yeah. Everything about it is the arrangements were really lush. Every track has, I mean, the use of synths, which synthesizers can be great. They can also be, a lot of the Decemberists, really lazy and try to evoke a certain era, right? 80s pop in particular, and not really work. Also The Weeknd. I'm sorry, people, but come on.
I hear plenty of The Weeknd in it, and I'm actually a fan of The Weeknd.
Anywho, I'm like real shady, negative Nancy today. I'm in a good mood. Haim puts me in a good mood, but look how I express myself.
I love like right now. I adore that song, and it does like one of the most cliche. Like it's what we were talking about earlier. It's right now.
yeah.
But it's great.
Well, and the closer, my pick for underrated was Night So Long, because I don't think I usually get to the end of the record because I'm so caught up in those earlier tracks that are so catchy to me that I don't get to Night So Long. But Night So Long is gorgeous. Yeah. It is a gorgeous arrangement. And that's more of that restraint we talked about with Man from the Magazine. To me, the bigness of it is such a, it could have gone so wrong, but to me, that production, that quote, that possible overproduction, it works to their strength. I could also see, though, where there's not a lot of, how to put this, there's not a lot of sharpness. Everything's very round in terms of the sound, right? Everything is like really accessible and open and big. And
it's not so angular.
I could see how you could listen to it and think it kind of lacks an identity because of that. Is that it? What's the thing?
I think that's it because just because of what you said, I really, really want to choose Women in Music Part 3 because it was between that album and Days Are Gone as my favorite album. Mm-hmm. But I did overall come to the conclusion that it was Days Are Gone for me. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like Something to Tell was kind of the carrying on of, and not necessarily in a bad way. It's just, out of the two, I feel like I prefer the songs on Days Are Gone compared to Something to Tell. And I very much so enjoyed, it was kind of earlier in the listening experience, but Women in Music Part 3, I kind of like the difference. Like, that was the most unique album out of the three to me.
I agree with that. It's definitely, it's the one that feels like it's trying to plant its own more of a unique identity from the other two.
And so I almost chose it. Really, I think it's a really good album. But again, I don't think they have a bad album anyway.
I agree with that. I do think for me, I think it's Women in Music is, there are parts of it. And some of it also is in the vocal delivery. I think she doesn't have, there's more falsetto to me. And Women in Music, there's more restraint in that. And again, I love that really big, open, not quite throaty, but also a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Like delivery, she has very Sheryl Crow, as you mentioned. I think that's a great. Yeah. I didn't hear it until you said it, and I'm like, I totally get it in a good way, right?
Yeah, I really don't have that many bad things to say about it. It's a tough. This was a really tough one because it was three albums. Like, I think we might have benefited if they would have released an album over these last 2 weeks, which I know that they're kind of in works.
It sounds like they are. Yeah.
It would have been great if they were to release that album because it would have given both of us a nice little easy out.
I mean, if that record had sounded more like The Steps, like I was expecting when I heard The Steps that the rest of the record was going to have, I mean, the riff and the steps is great. Yeah. I love the way that chorus hits. I think that's more of an outlier on that record than a lot of the more like programmed drums. Like they said they're influenced by Love Below and Speaker Box, which I thought was so funny to be influenced by these two very different things.
And it was interesting how they said it's like they spanned all these different genres and we wanted to try to do the same thing. I'm like, you already did.
Kind of, right?
Yeah, you already were fucking that experimental. But I mean, Up From a Dream, I think is really good. Gasoline, I think is actually a good tune. I've Been Down, I thought was going to be my least favorite song, and I ended off loving it.
3 a.m., Los Angeles, Fucked Up But True. Those are probably the tracks that I enjoy the least, and because there's so many of them on one record, it kind of leads me to that conclusion. But like a lot of the bands we've talked about that I think we're both like pretty favorable on, like when I hear a band's last record that you and I have talked about, and I think, okay, I think I'm done listening to this band.
Yeah.
I think I'm really excited to see what they're going to do next.
I don't think when we finish this episode, I've always told you, I'm always excited that I don't have to listen to the band again for a little while. It's nothing against the artists we've covered, but this time around, I actually think in the upcoming weeks, I'm probably going to actually listen to it more and have more things to say about it in future episodes.
And selfishly for me, when we were listening to some of our other bands, like I think some Arctic Monkeys, but I think even before that, back when we were listening to Daft Punk, Haim was my kind of escape from my assigned listening. Like that was like the me time listen. Yeah. And I was into like, funny enough, I was listening to Women in Music Part 3. So it was very nice for me to talk about this with you. Let's take a break and then go to our rankings.
Yep. Leo, take it away, buddy.
When it comes to making the goings-on of the world entertaining, we got you covered. The Chit Show is a news, pop culture, geek culture, and music podcast hosted by none other than Danny, a.k.a. Danko, and me, Leo, a.k.a. DJ Brute. Tune in as we cover all sorts of topics with a very opinionated and wild twist. The Chit Show Podcast, where chit-chat and shit shows come together for your entertainment. Tune in on your favorite streaming platforms with new episodes dropping every other Monday. Again, that's The Chit Show, a Baseblown Entertainment podcast.
All right, welcome back. No.
All right, I am very interested in your rating for Haim. I have mine. I did so much of this earlier this morning. I felt so comfortable getting everything prepared. And as we talk, I'm like very anxious again to give a rating for this.
Kind of the same throughout this entire episode. I feel like the listener, you might have heard it in my voice that there's been some hesitancy and a little like, I don't know if I did enough homework, and I feel like I did so much homework.
Which is why I'm just waiting for someone to, no one has, which I appreciate, but I'm waiting for someone to message us with, you know, being upset that we got something wrong or that they don't agree with our opinion. I think either of us would very quickly go, yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, like, right. I'll bring it up next episode. All that. Yeah.
Hey man, we just want to talk so that you can work out and feel like people are around you.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, guys. So we're going to give our ratings out of 10, and then you have a band to propose to me. You haven't done my punishment enough, so I'm going to give you my ratings as...
Dude, you dick. I was just about to do it. But
I took
you know
it
what?
For myself.
No, screw it. Screw it. The Lakers are better than the Warriors. Santa. Give me your rating.
Oh, I thought a lot about these ratings while I was doing my naughty or nice list, Rob McGregor.
It's a little early in the year, Santa.
Never too early. You know how many kids are... it's ridiculous. Ugh.
You know, my heart goes out to you, Santa.
Oh.
Is it all Christian kids?
I mean, it was. It's 2024, Rob McGregor.
Wake so what up. What did Colton tell you his rating was?
I don't care what Colton said. This is my rating. Nope.
You better discuss it with Colton then.
All right. 7 out of 10.
Not bad. Not bad, Colton.
Thank God.
But yeah. Santa, you did a great job there. Thank you for coming in.
Santa got real aggro. I don't know what's wrong with him. He's got a very
well, he's got a build up throughout the year. Like
he kept talking to me about the Joe Rogan podcast. I didn't know that's where Santa was at these days. It's very upsetting.
Not too many people believe in Santa these days, so I can understand where he's coming from.
He's got a very weird vibe nowadays. Yeah. All right. Yeah, 7 out of 10. I don't know. I think this is like without any memory of what our past like bands have been. I know where my higher ones have been. I think I just gave my highest ranking to Modest Mouse.
Yeah, I think you did 9.5.
Not something in the nines.
I know mine was 9.
I think the way I think of this 7 is I think they're such talented songwriters, and not even in just the, like, you know, the way that the lyrics match everything in that. They're so thoughtful about how every component of everything goes together. Yeah. And I think it leads to songs that are so undeniably catchy, and catchy in a way where you don't feel tricked into thinking they're catchy.
Yeah, I completely agree. I agree with what you said, Dor. It's thoughtful. The cool element to me is like they're poppy, but you have to kind of like dissect it. The first listen isn't the first time it's going to be great. You know, the more you listen to it, the more you kind of get to take in another little element. And I found that to be so extraordinarily well executed.
Yeah. And there's no shtick. Like, we're just talking about Pitchfork and that, like, manufactured cool that so many of the, like, Pitchfork headliner bands have that I can't stand. That, like, you know, I hate, okay, I'm going to throw this band out there. I'm sorry, man. Like, the Strokes, where it's like, we don't really care, but we're cool, we're not cool. I love how open and cheesy and corny Haim can be, and how perfectly they pull that off.
I think Danielle Haim would, oh, what the fuck, he guided me into being.
Yeah, Julie Casablancas is, I'm
just saying, but that's fine. I understand. But yeah, they really have a way to where they're so organically themselves.
Yeah, I love that.
That's very rare when it comes to artists. Like, even when, for as much as, you know, we say, like, you know, women in music, anything I dislike about that album or about the two previous albums, it's really not much of a dislike. I don't hold anything against them for taking the adventurous route they went down.
It's a great example of a band where their misses for me, I recognize that their misses and their like songs where they nail it, they all come from a similar space. And so I'm okay with the tracks that don't work, because I think that formula that they're using to do what they're doing is really, really great. And I know they're coming from a similar spot. Yeah. I'm so interested. What is your rating, Rob?
I'm really surprised at my rating, but it is just from an appreciation of their songwriting stance, their songwriting ability, their performance ability. The live shows really brought it home for me. I'm giving them an 8 out of 10.
Beautiful, man.
It's that damn good to me. As it kept growing on me, I started having those Sanford and Sons moments where I'm like holding my chest. It's going like, it's beautiful. It's great work. While I usually would call out kind of corny production quality, again, I think that they just owned it so much. Like, this is you guys. I don't feel like I'm getting a falsified artistic expression.
Totally.
And initially, totally I did, agree. And they turned me around on it. So, more power to them. But yeah, I'm giving them an 8 out of 10.
Check out Haim, everybody. This is I am so excited. I was telling you this on the phone. As we get nearer to the end of the podcast, I get super excited because I don't know what band you're going to choose for next episode. And I'm like very anxious.
Well, it's like I told you, I had two artists I was kind of bouncing back and forth. They both had 5 albums each, but me also being an artist, just like you are an artist, we both are songwriters. My band is getting really close to finishing a long overdue album, and so over the next 2 weeks I really, really want to focus more on finishing this album rather than listening to 5 albums by 2 different artists that I'm not as sure of. So I chose a really good option because they only have 3 albums with a couple of EPs, and we can include them.
All right. Give me some clues. I'm ready for this.
All right. I want to make this a little difficult. Let's start with Hail Mary.
You're off to a great start.
Not sure.
Okay. Wait. Hail Mary. Okay. Hail Mary.
Let's go with Give Love. Nothing? I love this.
Man. Are you naming song titles right now?
I am.
Ooh. Okay.
You are more familiar with this artist than you may realize.
Wait a second. Wait a
second. No. If you know, don't say it. My next hint is not a song title. The Hub. The Hub.
Can I say it real quick? I got super excited because when I typed in Hail Mary into Google, it came up with Tupac, and I went, are we going to talk about Tupac? I got super excited.
That would have been cool. Now we have to do that.
I realize we're not. So Hail Mary, The Hub, they played at The Hub, which is a venue in Santa Barbara.
Uh-huh.
Hail Mary. It's not Cursive, because Cursive has way more than three records.
My last hint, Bikes.
What was the last one? We're talking about Facing New York.
Facing New York.
Whoa, okay.
Three albums.
Whoa.
Wow, bro. But yeah, three albums. We should talk about the EPs, but we'll do all our ratings based off of, or all our categories off of the three albums.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, whatever you want to bring up for the EPs, there. I know there's a lot that they had.
Yeah.
I think the three records are great.
Yeah. I figure this will be fun. And I'm sorry for the listener. I just have a lot of the default American album is right at that line to where drums, bass, and guitars have been completed for the most part. But now I got to do some solos and all of the vocals. So for the next 2 weeks, I don't want to get too distracted by an artist I'm not as familiar with. And
do we have to talk about when Matthew Fosse was in Taking Back Sunday?
Of course we do.
Okay. I'm excited to talk about Facing New York with you. I'm just remembering now. We could talk about this in way more detail next time, but the live video in Taking Back Sunday that I'll never forget is the acoustic one they played in that little round stage. And you had like their one guitarist, Eddie Reyes, who never does anything. And he's like sitting with one drumstick, like kind of hitting a floor tom out of rhythm, just doing whatever. And everyone else is just doing nothing. And then the bassist and I think Sean Cooper, and Matthew Fosse is doing everything else. He does everything on that live performance because he's so great. And everyone else looks so lazy.
Can I just address this for the audience? The reason I brought up The Hub is Colton and I, in our old band, opened up for Facing New York and Cursive.
Cursive, that's right.
Yeah, like playing at UCSB's.
I don't know if we want to tell more of that story next episode.
Oh, we will.
Spider Tom. That's all I remember.
Was that part of that show?
That's exactly what that show was. We'll talk about it next episode, everyone. We're embarrassed. Will. Everybody, have a great 2 weeks. Take care of yourselves.
Yes.
February. I don't know what month we're in. Check out Kid Static. I feel really bad listening to Kid Static.
Facing New York. That's the main
one. We got stuff.